cup. Boom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
It's never a dull moment on the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, but Ben is not in the house today. I will be your solo host, David Gascon. So that's right. If you did tune in for Big Ben Maller, he will be here shortly, but not right now. In place of him is a former offensive lineman of the National Football League. Actually played ball at Notre Dame. They got his way to the Denver Broncos. Played on the great Super Bowl 50 championship team that had one of the best defenses in all the land. Ryan Harris, you were in the house. What's up, man? How you doing?
David, good to join you, my friend.
Yeah, it's good to have you in here. There's a lot of chatter, obviously, with the NFL offseason. It's never a dull moment, and we're going to get to some of your background in a few moments, but I have to jump into this because you're knee-deep in all of it with the National Football League. What's the sentiment out there right now with training camps right around the corner, a lot of eyeballs on Drew Lock, but of course there's still those rumblings about one Deshaun Watson in Houston.
Well, Deshaun Watson, but also Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. I mean, half of this town still believes Aaron Rodgers is going to be the quarterback, and I'm kind of with them. I mean, I don't know how the Packers saga ends with the way that everyone's behaved. Now, Aaron's going to have to fork up $30 million if he doesn't play this year, which at the end of the day, David, I don't know what you can do to get me $30 million mad at you, right? So sure. I think eventually something will come of it. But, yeah, Drew Lock just did not show progression last season especially. And in a big game for his career, the second game against the Chiefs last year, he threw two interceptions that cost him the game. And those are the kinds of mistakes that that coaches and fans are tired of seeing, and there's already been some of the same in OTAs.
Yeah, it's frustrating to look at when you have a quarterback in that kind of situation. It's not like you're in a spot where you have minimal talent around you. This isn't Sam Darnold in New York with the Jets. This is a guy with potential Pro Bowlers on the outside and a pretty darn good defense, in particular at home. So when you look at the situation in Denver right now, Ryan, and you're calling the shots there, I mean, obviously you'd love to have a guy like Aaron Rodgers, but if this all plays out, and let's just say for argument's sake, nothing serious happens to Deshaun Watson, would you more look closer towards Aaron Rodgers, or would you look immediate and down the road with a guy like Deshaun Watson? What would you rather have?
Well, Deshaun Watson's fascinating from a longevity perspective, right? Even with Aaron Rodgers, you're thinking, hey, listen, hey, Tom Brady at 43 says hello, but you're thinking maybe 2 to 3 more years for Aaron Rodgers. But with Deshaun Watson, you've got 10 to 15 years, right? And that's a different element if you're a team looking at it. I don't believe anybody's going to touch Deshaun Watson with what's currently going on. But at the same time, you still have an opportunity next year for both quarterbacks. I mean, after this season, the guaranteed money for Aaron Rodgers goes away. And next year, you'll still have an opportunity to play for Deshaun Watson, who doesn't want to be a part of the Texans this year or next. So whether you could take your shot now is one question. Depends on, you know, how do you and your fan base feel. I don't think any fan base is willing to accept a player who has the kind of allegations that Deshaun has at this time.
Sure.
And Aaron Rodgers, how does that end? And so in that case, Deshaun has far more upside, but Aaron Rodgers is the man right now.
Who hurts your locker room more?
You know, just from the stories that I've heard, it's Aaron Rodgers has been operating on a different level than his teammates for a long time. And I understand, too, as a champion myself, when you are a champion, you have a different dedication to to the details. And you have a zero patience for people who don't pay attention to those details. So I understand how those things could be misconstrued. But, it's always tough to bring an older guy into a locker room. I mean, hey, I was a league dad. And when you come into the NFL, you have guys who say, hey, we want to go spend Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night out. And as a dad, you're in the NFL saying, well, hey, man, I want to make sure that, I get 9 hours of sleep and my latte's ready in the morning. It's a different life. So it's always tough to bring older players into a locker room in professional sports.
Well, but being a former offensive lineman, if you are in that situation with a signal caller of either Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson's talents, who would you be more inclined to block harder for? I mean, not to say that you're going to be bailing on a play, but I would imagine that there's an extra sense of urgency when you're blocking for Peyton Manning as opposed to somebody else.
Well, the urgency comes from the opportunity, right? It doesn't matter what the quarterback's doing. You have an opportunity to win a championship, and that's what made us so successful Super Bowl 50 season. It was the best team that I'd ever been a part of. We had guys who were ready to play, guys who were goofballs who were showing up at 6:45 in the morning.
Yeah,
you know, and so at that point, you know, Peyton created a lot of urgency at the line of scrimmage with his dummy calls and his Omahas. But you want to win, and if you're with a team that wants to win, that urgency comes out no matter who the quarterback is.
So going to that team then, Ryan, and you mentioned it's the greatest team you've ever played on. Leading up to that season, was there any thought that you guys can do what you did?
There was 100% belief that we would do what we did. You know, Shannon Sharp came and spoke to us to start the season during training camp, and he said, hey, if you're not here to win a championship, get the bleep out of here. Mm. And that was pretty much the tone that we had from day two of being together in training camp. We knew it was possible. We knew that this was probably Peyton's last year. And a lot of the team, you know, I had come from the Chiefs to come back to the Broncos. A lot of the team had lost in Super Bowl 48,
right,
which saved a lot of money, right? Because a lot of guys are like, hey, don't buy everybody a hotel room, because if you lose, you're going to be looking at those people saying, I got 10 grand a hotel room sitting here looking at me in the face, right? So you had a lot of benefit and experience and a ton of willingness, and that's what made us so successful.
Was that more on the offense, though, or was it the defense? Because the guys on the defensive side brought the wood every single week. So when you have a guy like DeMarcus Ware, that puts a little bit more pressure on other guys around him to actually perform up to his level.
Well, DeMarcus Ware also showed us the way, right? How to behave. I still drink plant-based protein shakes because DeMarcus Ware told me to. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and he would have dinners and events and things that gave guys opportunities to get out of the house, but also kept you in the nucleus and in the world of, hey, let's be successful. Let's not be stupid.
Sure.
Right? Let's have some fun, but your ass better be in practice tomorrow morning. And having a leader like DeMarcus Ware and the influence he had on Von Miller, and then Von Miller's performance that entire season, not just that year. You know, Malik Jackson, Danny Trevathan, Chris Harris Jr., Aqib Talib, and we had some real players, and it was a big difference.
No fly zone, the best secondary you ever played for?
Oh, no question. No question at all.
It's interesting just the way that the game has changed so much, not only from the last 5 to 10 years, but from the last 20 or 25 years. Do you think we'll ever get that kind of similarity of what we had? I mean, you could go back to the earlier Bronco championship teams, 97, 98. Those were play-action, run-balanced teams. Do you think the game will ever morph into something like that again, or do you feel like it is going to be 3 and 4 and 5 wide personnel with a lot of this read option stuff?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Not everybody can do what Patrick Mahomes is doing
right.
With the Kansas City Chiefs. And I covered their Sunday night game against the Broncos. And I talked to some of my former coaches and said, hey, you guys are running two plays at the same time. And they kind of laughed and they were like, well, we haven't been called on it yet. You know, so as much as everybody thinks they can do the run-pass option, not a lot of teams are going to have a called run play and a quarterback who you give the green light to and say, hey, if you see a matchup you like, let that ball rip. And, oh, by the way, that quarterback has to get it downfield before that lineman gets on his third step. So you're always going to have play action pass. A lot of football is, you know, human nature. When you show a linebacker a football and you give the right shoulder read as a quarterback and that running back comes over and quickly the offensive lineman shows to the backer, he has to think run. And that's how you create plays. So we're always going to see an evolution and an ebb and flow, but the play-action pass, the downhill run, the third and one, the fourth and goal, those are going to be staples of every championship team for now and forever.
What's the longevity look like for a guy like Lamar Jackson?
Well, Lamar Jackson has a decision to make. He has to decide whether he's going to be the best player he can be or if he's going to spend his time trying to be a player that he's not. And I've talked to players and coaches who are on the Ravens, and one of the things that last year in their stretch, one of the coaches told me Lamar wanted to be a passer. He just wanted to be a passer, and we lost games because of that. Mm-hmm. And if you look, that roster's not really built for it. And so Lamar Jackson has to make that decision of saying, hey, I am Lamar Jackson. I can be a great passer, but I'm not going to be a Peyton Manning. I'm not going to be a Tom Brady. Same way Tom Brady's not trying to be Lamar Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. And so if he can just work within his skill set and maximize his potential, the nuances on play-action passes, when he decides to run, getting out of bounds. I mean, these are things that are really going to allow him to win a championship if he can commit to being different, and that's what every champion is.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
If you had a quarterback for the next 5 years, would you rather have Russell Wilson or Justin Herbert?
Russell Wilson. Justin Herbert's got an unbelievable arm. I mean, wear sweatpants when he throws the deep ball. It's unbelievable. But Russell Wilson has won. And so he knows that, you know, a seemingly insignificant game in week 7 is the difference between home field advantage and not, right? He also knows what matters and what doesn't matter when you're going to the Super Bowl. I mean, David, I had over 200 ticket requests the week before we left for the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. None of those people were my friends, right? And so you have to, a lot of success, as you know, is understanding, recognizing distractions, and having total belief in yourself. And that's something that Russell Wilson has perfected over his career.
Can you take me through that then too, Ryan? I mean, because you played ball at the collegiate level at Notre Dame, and then you go to Denver and you bounce around the league. What has that been like for you when you went from high school to college and started receiving a ton of accolades, and then you have the spotlight on you, and then you get to the show, you get to the National Football League. How did you actually process that, and did you have anyone help you along the way, like hold your hand and say, hey, Ryan, this is how you act like a professional, eat, drink, sleep, the whole smash?
Well, a lot of it started with I never played football for you, right? I played football because it gave me an opportunity to maximize my skill set. I mean, David, I've been taking people's lunch money since high school because I'm faster than them. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's go. And so the big thing for me is I never did it for anybody else. And I never did it for external validation. But to your point, there were dozens of veterans who showed me the ropes, you know. I think about Wade Smith when I went to the Texans. They used to call me the Wanderer because I didn't know where I was going, and he literally showed me where the bathroom and the meeting rooms were. You know, you need people like that. I also had a mental performance coach all 10 years I was in the NFL, and to really understand the process behind success. You know, you make the game-winning catch, the game-winning block, the game-winning kick the same way you make any block, kick, or pass, or catch, right?
Sure.
If you're catching the ball, you look the ball into your hands, and you squeeze it when it hits your fingers. I mean, when you focus on the process, you reduce anxiety over 70%. So I had people that would talk to me in that athletic realm, people that, you know, taught me that not every coach is a good coach. And the year we won Super Bowl 50, we had a mental performance coach on our staff that really helped, you know, helped us identify external versus internal validation. Am I playing football to make David happy, or am I playing football because I want to have fun and rip someone's face off? Because now it really doesn't matter whether David wants tickets or if David wants to come to the after party. Those are things that will figure themselves out. That's not why I'm here. And that's a very different player to play against. And so I absolutely needed great coaches, the great coaches that I did have, the veterans I had. And I also needed to make sure that I remembered why I loved football and had nothing to do with other people's opinion.
On that note, because you had that kind of help and you had that kind of support, did other players seek you out for that kind of inspiration, that kind of comfort, and that kind of, I guess, advice along the way?
Of course. You know, I mean, one of the things, you know, that I wrote about in my book, Mindset for Mastery, is that when you choose your mindset, when you decide that you're there for yourself and not other people, you're going to scare the crap out of people, right? There's a lot of players in the NFL getting paid to lose. They didn't win a championship. They didn't go to the playoffs, and they still got paid. What do you do? And so you start to notice the people who don't get affected. Hey, if a coach is ripping my ass, hey, if I did something wrong, great. But I'm not going to take everything that coach is saying as improvement, right? There's going to be some personal attacks. There might be some attacks on, you know, your physical capabilities. That has nothing to do with the fact that I'm going to go out here the next play, correct my mistake, and help us win a game. And when you start being around people who are not thrown off by someone's anger or by someone's angst, you gravitate towards those people. You gravitate towards people who move when things go wrong. And so whether it was in the game that we were losing after a loss, making sure you still are having fun and appreciating the ride, I was very lucky to be a leader in the last three offensive line rooms that I was in.
It's the old saying, right? Show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser.
Exactly, right? You know, but you also have to understand, when I was with the Steelers after we won the Super Bowl, I believe we lost four straight games at one point, and everybody's head was down. Like, hey, listen, you're going to lose some games.
Right.
That cannot stop you from believing that you're going to win a championship. And you got to have fun. You got to smile. You got to stay loose. And those things make a difference.
You brought the book, and I want to talk about that at some decent length real quick. What inspired you to actually write it?
Mindset for Mastery. It's available on Amazon. And, you know, when I look at my 10-year NFL career, the difference between people who are successful and who are not are people who choose their mindset. And when you win the Super Bowl, everything you believe about yourself comes true for other people. But you have to believe that first. So from getting knocked out of my cleats in college to, you know, learning the lessons that I learned in the NFL, I wanted to share that with people because, David, we talk about failure less than we talk about sex. And I want to tell you, failure is the most common thread to every success story. Here's how I failed. Here's how I built my way out of it. Each of us choose our mindset every day. Choose yours with the words, I am, I can, I will.
When you've had those situations of doubt, what do you do? I mean, best practices. Because the reality is, we've, you know, in the sports talk world, and you are like, you were in the show with us, you know, for last year and a half, we've been through the coronavirus pandemic. There's no sports going on. People are losing jobs. They're losing loved ones. They're isolated. Take me through that for you, not only as a professional in the media world, but even just as an individual that has an impact on the local community. What have you done during that time?
Well, you know, one, I am alive, right? Yeah. Like, hey, you know, to have an opinion means you're alive. Good for you, right? And for a lot of us, for 600,000 of us, that's not the case, right? So I'd literally say things like, hey, I am alive. I'm grateful. I have a job. I am employed. You know, I am responsible for myself and my family. I'm going to make choices that are what's best for them, not what anybody else thinks about. I can, you know, I can attack every day with opportunity. I can read. I can learn. I can, you know, mitigate my risk to get COVID. I can tell stories that are similar to what you'll see in The Last Dance. Or I can relate, you know, a sports topic to something people are talking about in their real life. I will have fun doing it. I will make sure I make people laugh doing it. So that's how I choose my mindset. That's how I walk into everything from parenting to living to being a professional. And once you set a framework, I mean, there's study after study that shows our brain believes in the words we say out loud, right? And
right.
And when you envision and visualize your success, it usually happens. So I'm a big believer in, hey, you know, you could, when you go against Von Miller, David, because you're no doubt going to put on the pads this year now that coronavirus has you football ready. When you're facing Von Miller on 3rd and 9, you better believe you're going to block his ass,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what's your choice? Right. And so I just take that to my life often of, hey, I could choose to be upset. I could choose to wallow in anger or frustration, but that's not productive. What can I do? How can I move forward? What way will I decide? Here we go.
You brought up The Last Dance. That was something I think most of the sports world watched during the summer of last year. If there's a guy on that championship team of the Broncos in Super Bowl 50 that you could say, I don't want to say exactly, but you can kind of put in that same picture as a Dennis Rodman saying, hey, he'll probably leave for a series, go to Vegas, party his ass off with some strippers, and then come back and do his thing. Who would that have been on that Bronco team?
Thankfully, we didn't have a guy like that. Now, I will tell you, after we won the Super Bowl, I mean, I was in Vegas when Darth Vader came from the club at the Wynn and had a $15,000 bottle of champagne and Afrojack started playing on the DJ booth. I mean, that was crazy, right? But we didn't have guys like that.
No.
And I mean, we had guys that got it in, don't get me wrong, but when it was time to play, it was time to play. And also, you know, I think part of the interesting thing about The Last Dance and that scene you're talking about, you know, Coach Jackson was talking to Michael and Rodman of like, hey, Rodman needs a break. Coach Kubiak was not going to do that. You know, Coach Kubiak's not going to go to Peyton and say, hey, Peyton, you know, Ryan Harris needs a break. He's going to go to Vegas for a couple of days of practice. We'll see him soon. Like, that's not happening on that team that we were on. But, I mean, there's a Dennis Rodman on every team and every family, isn't there?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Ryan, it's been a lot of fun having you on. Since you are in the media scope right now, what do you actually do? I mean, you're on radio, but do you do public speaking? Are you outside of that? Are you on anything else with the Broncos, or what do you do?
Yeah, I got a sports talk show weekdays here in Denver, and I do all the Notre Dame football radio broadcasts. I do some Westwood One radio broadcasts, and might do some TV work for Telemundo this year on their NFL package because I speak into Spanish. So it's all fun, man, and more than anything, you know, I'm a husband, I'm a father, and being financially literate and doing the right things with my money really set me up to do the things I enjoy now in retirement.
Speaking of retirement, and many people might not know this, but I had a little bit of a hint on it. I don't know what your playing weight was exactly. I don't know what your weight is now, but being 6'5", and amongst all those other things, you're also a surfer. So what the hell is it like you getting on a board right now, especially when you come down to Southern California?
Oh, man, I love it. I was just in Huntington Beach, man. I need a 9-foot board, first of all, okay? So let's be honest here. I need one of those storm breakers or whatever they're called.
Right.
But I love it, man. I love getting out in the water. I love hitting a wave. And if anybody surfs, they know it's a feeling unlike any other, and it's something that I think about every day.
Yeah, I was going to say, were you watching some old school Point Break, like looking at some Johnny Utah instructional videos to get up on the board or what? Yeah.
I've never watched Point Break.
Oh,
I don't think I watched
the
movie. Yeah, but you know, one of the off seasons in the NFL, I went to Maui and I surfed my first wave, and it just felt like God's hand was throwing me towards the shore and saying, "Have fun." It was just an incredible feeling, and then later on, dropping into my first wave, it was just such an awesome experience and something I literally, David, I was in L.A. surfing, and I surfed through lunch down in Southern California, Orange County over there. So I'm crazy about it. I love it, and I love the looks too. And people see one, a black surfer, two, a huge black surfer. You know, you get some of those. What the hell is this guy doing here? But I love the looks, but I love the waves even better.
So does that mean that you have the bug that you'll start traveling maybe to Australia or New Zealand or somewhere in Europe to try to catch some waves one day?
The minute these kids are at college, you know, I'm out of here, David. Let's go, man. Let's surf the world, brother.
Why the hell not? Well, listen, if you do that, and when you do that, I need you to at least promise me this, because it's culture when you grew up in the 90s, is that you just need to pop in or find an old school VHS tape and just look. Patrick Swayze, Keanu Reeves, Gary Busey, Point Break. Not the remix version of it, the original version of Point Break. I can promise you, Ryan, you won't be disappointed. And you might feel a little nostalgic too, because this is back in the day when Gary Busey was actually pretty decent, and of course Patrick Swayze was alive and well.
Yeah, before Busey started ripping out endocrine systems and stuff like that. Well, hey, well, you ain't got to threaten me with a good time, David. I'll check it out for sure. And hey, and anybody who's listening who hasn't surfed yet, get yourself a lesson. Check it out.
No doubt about it. Ryan, one last time before we let you go, a mindset of mastery. Where again can everyone find that for you?
Yeah, you can check it out on Amazon.com, Mindset for Mastery, or visit my website, RyanHarris68.com. And if I can be of service or resource, please reach out.
For sure, for sure. Ryan, I appreciate the time today. Have a good weekend, man. I'm sure we'll catch up again sometime before the NFL regular season gets underway.
Thanks, David. Surf's up. See ya.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.